Welcome to the Money Wise Women Show, brought to you by MoneyMorphosis.com. Are you ready to be inspired to upgrade your financial skills? Listen to feminine leaders sharing practical advice and valuable insight. Shift your money mindset, improve communication skills, and learn financial management tips. Although we do not provide investment advice, you can check out MoneyMorphosis.com. That's MoneyMorphosis.com to find simple ways to boost your true wealth.
Hello, Crystal Arnold here, your hostess and creator of the Money Wise Women Show, and also founder of Money Morphosis, where if you are listening to this show, you can also go to money-morphosis.com to find a full write-up in the podcast section about this conversation that we are having today. So, as many of you know, my background is in international economics, which is my college degree. And what's fascinating is the power of really making our assets more visible. And this really holds true at the individual level within our families and our broader communities, is that I've found again and again when people are able to take an asset-based approach where they really focus on what's working well, what is most valuable at the beginning of any development process or family exploration, that is so much more powerful than starting with what needs to be fixed or what isn't working. And it's incredible what it does to the mind to actually have our assets mapped out and made visible, especially in an economy and mainstream media, which is so deficit-based and constantly giving us messages of not enough and scarcity, which really triggers the fear and shuts down our creativity. And I believe that there's so much more wealth in our communities than we even realize. And this is why I am so excited to have our guest today on the show, Wendy Brower. She has been a true pioneer and created something back in the 90s called Green Maps, which I'll tell you a little bit more about, which does exactly this, you know, is asset-based mapping for communities, which has spread across the world now and truly empowers the people who are involved. And she really has been a voice for this movement for decades now. So Wendy, she, as I said, started green mapping back in New York City in the 1990s, and it was a way to connect tourists, residents, new people in the city to green spaces and other culturally significant locations in New York. And the idea caught on and soon grew into a worldwide phenomenon. And at this point, there's something like 550 printed green maps in different communities. 500 of these interactive green maps are online. And so you can check out more about that project at greenmap.org. So as I said, Wendy is she's an eco-designer, a social entrepreneur, and is still based in New York City. And her projects do include the nonprofit Green Map System, which is, as I described, a sustainability mapping movement, which is now in 65 different countries. And she has also been involved in numerous local regenerative sustainable design projects, and really is a visionary and pioneer in this field. So excited to have you on, Wendy. Would love to begin by hearing a little bit from you about what makes the work you do so exciting.
Oh, thank you, Crystal. I'm delighted to speak with you today and talk with you about this world of Green Map, one of the most exciting elements to me is its flexibility. We created a series of adaptable resources so that people locally can lead this effort. We don't make green maps of any place but New York City, generally speaking, because it's the place we know and we want to keep going back to and seeking out more and more of the assets and also the challenges we face as a community. So I really love how it's helped all kinds of map makers, and maybe that's their first time making a map, use these tools to share their worldview about what's going on in their home place. I really feel the world is a beautiful place, and not enough people see it that way. So this is a way to provide a direct and actionable perspective on what's happening locally and how you can get involved. So my day-to-day flexibility, I go to lots of different events and meetings and get to collaborate with people. So I feel very much like I get to help empower people to communicate about the issues and the challenges and help them then invite more people and more people and more people to get involved.
Wow, it truly is remarkable how far and wide it's spread, and I love the way that you have made it open source and really available and accessible for community leaders to apply in their own neighborhoods. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about how Green Maps came about and your personal journey and what led you to create this?
Sure, I'd be delighted. Perhaps people remember the Earth Summit that took place in Rio de Janeiro in the summer of 1992. Well, it was actually June 1992, which is winter there. But in any case, I didn't go to Rio, but I was involved in the planning meetings at the UN just beforehand. And it was literally sitting in a room full of New Yorkers who were getting ready for this influx of people all over the world to come and talk about sustainability at the UN for 5 weeks. They were developing what became the known as Agenda 21, these 21 principles for sustainable communities. We learned about how we were just at the tipping point, that more of humanity would be soon living in cities than outside of cities. And I kept thinking about urban dwellers, what I knew in New York, and all the signs of progress towards sustainability that were part of my life. And instead of thinking about creating an event or a discussion, I thought about the individual's experience. What would people see when they were out and about in New York City? And how could I share what I knew? And I realized if I made a map, it would be, first of all, resource efficient. It wouldn't be creating a whole lot of materials that would be thrown away. It would be universally understandable, like all maps are. You don't need to know the local language to understand how to use the map to get where you want to go. To help people discover and allows you to guide people in a gentle way towards making different kinds of decisions. And lastly, I knew I could do this in the 6 weeks we had till the event took place. So literally, I had the idea on a Friday afternoon. I came up with the name Green Map later that day. I went to a party that night and told my idea to Tracy Calvin, who is the curator at Municipal Art Society, where I had pitched in on a show earlier in the year. And she said, you know what, our printer owes us a favor. And she made one phone call, and we had 10,000 copies donated. So, you know, this is the era before email. I also got on the phone, and I invited 12 friends to lunch. So within 24 hours, we had a team, we had a printing budget, we had designers and people with a lot of knowledge from different neighborhoods involved, and we decided together at lunch, let's not only make a map. Let's create an event. So we were off and running in no time. And this is one of the really great aspects about this project is people want to get involved. So there's very few green maps that have been made by one person, other than perhaps a student who's doing it for a thesis project. Generally, they are labors of love that bring lots of perspectives together and really show a collaborative view of what's going on. That first map was reached a global audience who was part of that UN event, but it was really the second edition, which we made later that year, because so many people sent in new things that belonged on the map. And this idea of how did you make the map, how can we make one like it, started percolating. And it was that second map that got really much more broadly distributed. And I kept watching how people interacted with the map. How did they open it? What did they look at? What drew their attention? And I realized the symbol system could be the thing that would link maps made locally all around the world together. So it wouldn't really matter if you were making a hand-drawn map or a really sophisticated map designed on, you know, graphic design or GIS, I mean, geographic information system software. If we had the same symbol system, the same kind of ideas could be noticed from place to place, could become models for people to take home, and could help link the sites together around the world. So the idea of co-creating an iconography became kind of step one of going global. And I was very fortunate to be invited to come talk about the greening of New York at the United Nations Social Summit, which took place in Copenhagen in 1995. And because I was coming and there were other members of a global network I was already part of called O2, which is an ecological design network, we all decided, let's see what we can do together. And everybody threw ideas on the table. One person threw a modem on the table, and we looked at the new medium of the internet together, and we decided as a group that Green Map would become our first internet collaboration. So it was global from that moment forward, and that was March 25th of 1995, 23 years ago already. Wow. I literally didn't have even email at that point. And when I came home from Copenhagen, I went and I bought the domain greenmap.org and greenmap.com and got email going. And we literally developed version one of the iconography using the internet. It was just thrilling. Of course, we had some things that we sent back and forth by fax. Remember faxes, folks? And wow. After we were a little bit down the road and there was a couple dozen maps out there, we said, let's revisit that iconography and updated it. We've actually updated it three times now, and we're gearing up for number four. So the concept is of a living lexicon of symbols that helps us understand the evolving world of sustainability in the community context. So it's been a wonderful thing. People ask sometimes, how did you get so much uptake so fast? And one of our tricks, because this is useful for somebody out there, is we went for the lowest common denominator. And we kept thinking about how are we going to get these symbols in a format that they're useful for people. Now, remember, it's 1995. Most people do not have computers at home. Many are using internet cafes. There's varied, the geographic information software was really tricky to use then. Most people didn't know how to use graphic tools, so we made it a font, a type style. So once you installed it in your computer, you could use the icons with any program in your computer, whether it was a drawing program or something like Word. And that gave people a big jump start on using the symbol system. And those symbols of course, we provided them on stickers, and people hand drew them. They did all sorts of things where there wasn't a computer. But what the icons do is they really like put a brand on things in a way that helps crystallize their meaning and remove some of the confusion about what are we talking about here. And it helps people connect. So we've never said these are the only icons you can use on a map, which has been really helpful if people have a familiar symbol for perhaps their transit system, or even a local recycling program can be used, whatever. And we find that for young people, making new icons is really a thrill. So that's how part of the way our symbol system has grown. And if people are curious, greenmap.org/icons, you can download the poster and see some of the latest things we've done with it right there on that page in many languages.
Wow. I just love that story of its inception and how quickly you really attracted resources and feel like it was such a visionary, brilliant idea at just the right time to really garner support and bring people together. So because this is an asset-based approach, there's a whole, you know, field of called asset-based community development, and I'm just curious, like, what does make asset-based approaches so effective, and what happens to people in the communities, you know, psychologically, their sense of place and belonging and self-esteem when they are able to be part of the green map mapping process?
Well, of course, it's different all over, and, you know, our projects are led by all different sectors, city agencies or universities, there's grassroots groups, design companies, children's projects. There's many iterations. So, and sometimes they blend and change over the years as work as different campaigns or different opportunities come up. But for everybody, the process can be really transformative because you're you know, using location-based technologies or location-based thinking really helps set a different context for where you are. And most people become really happy because they realize there's actually all these resources they had never noticed before. For young people especially, it can become a permanent sense of belonging that they gain to a place because they've mapped it, they become responsible for it, and they feel a sense of ownership, and that's really important these days, especially as people are moving around a lot or feel, you know, the community keeps changing. How do I get my rooted sensibilities going? And for lots of people, it's a way to share what they know. So in the whole, it becomes a way of doing offers and needs about your community, and you can see through the mapping what parts of your community are being left out or dumped on, as well as those that are doing the best, driving forward towards becoming greener and healthier places. So it can be very revealing to see the map and to be part of the knowledge base that helps keep the map fresh and alive. Lots of us are doing beyond making maps, we're also providing tours or talks or diving deeper into these worlds you uncover right in your own city. And everybody has something going on in their community. It's just you might not realize how important it is until you put it on the map. So it elevates even the small sites. It promotes a new way of living and working right in your own community. It can be really fun.
Wow, I love that. It sounds like a more intimate economy and greater understanding of just all the wealth that exists. And I think it's so valuable to share what we view as value and redefine, you know, so often it's reduced to only what can be measured is, you know, our in economics measuring the GDP and just looking at, wow, there is so much else of value, say the open green spaces or, you know, things that may not be of monetary value but can really show up on a map. And so what do you think is the power in this day and age of redefining wealth and really making our value visible as communities?
Oh, it's really important because especially, you know, I consider this the age of uncertainty that we're in right now with climate change making so many people feel a little bit out of control. It's a really good way to feel more connected to what's going on, and it's at the local level where we can make change happen ourselves, where we can get involved over the long term and really see the things we care about become stronger. And so I see that as an important aspect of this. We also find out we have counterparts across town, that we are not the only ones thinking about these things. And if we join forces, we can accomplish more and raise more value and more people can be involved because of it.
So you've touched on this a little bit. I'd like to hear a little bit more about what you've learned from all of this international work and organizing and really, you know, what are some of the most effective ways that communities can cooperate and collaborate and organize most effectively?
Well, this is one of the magics of having an iconography is that we share. Is it really makes the good ideas that are working in one place become more wantable in another. So it makes concepts portable and practices portable. Because there's so many ways now that we can accomplish things. And I found one of the really effective tools is telling related stories. And it's not saying this is how you should change, but this is how somebody else in a similar maybe topography or somewhat similar culture has addressed the same issue. And, you know, mapping is transformed in the last 20, 25 years that we've been working in. Mapping has become a ubiquitous part of our life. Who hasn't looked at a map today? And I don't think we did that 25 years ago. Our maps were in boxes, a shoebox or the car glove compartment. And when you were going someplace new, you'd check the map. But you didn't use it even to go very familiar places like we do now. So that's a part of it that's changed. Internationally, one of the stories I've sometimes told, we were very lucky and were invited to the Bellagio Center by the Rockefeller Foundation. And we brought 22 people from 14 countries. And many people had really made amazing and sophisticated maps. The simplest maps were made by the green map makers from Cuba, and yet their maps made all of us cry. And it really helped us understand another level of the value of sharing, you know, what we were able to accomplish through the mapping process. They made us cry because they started with problems. They would map all the issues in their community and then also work on them together and then rewrite the map. So it was such a beautiful way of working. We have a video on our YouTube called Drop by Drop. 2 years ago I was back in Cuba. One of the places that I got to see was a mangrove forest that was made through this process of looking at issues, how do we strengthen, how do we address the problem here, which was flooding? Now there's not only the mangrove forest, but there's also a nursery for mangroves where they're growing them in different situations. So, for example, soil with runoff in it, very salty soil, shadier soil. So they're testing different varieties. There's an eco center there. There's scuba diving. And really the scuba is for tourism. Tourists, it's a way to generate income. But they told me this year, after all the hurricanes that came through there, that part of the coast where that mangrove forest had been planted survived just fine, whereas all around it, tons of devastation. So, you know, it's really looking ahead at not only what are our issues today, but it's like planting a tree, thinking about where will this tree be in 50 years? You know, how will it still be shading? How is it too close? Is it, what's its habitat? The value of the services that that tree is providing to us in terms of cool air and shade and bird song, so many other things, is part of what we can think about as we're working through the Green Map process.
Yes, it really feels like a crucial part of how we can transition into an economy which is more circular and sometimes called the sharing economy. I see that we have been part of an extractive economy where value is taken from our neighborhoods and from the earth itself and extracted and consolidated into the hands of fewer and fewer corporations. And this sounds like a really important part of getting people involved, seeing what is most valuable in their community, and being able to make more long-term decisions economically, right?
Right. I mean, here in New York, one of the things that's been really great for us is the community gardens. We don't necessarily have our own backyard or roof space or terrace. And there's little green spots all over that are maybe nurtured by 15 or 20 or 30 people, you know, at a time. Everybody gets enjoyment out of it. Everybody can have the oxygen. You don't need to be a member to use the garden. And it, like many other things that are part of what I see as the sharing and circular economy, change our ideas about what ownership means. I own my community garden as much as I own the jacket I'm wearing right now, in many senses of the word. Last week, we had a green map maker from Tokyo here, and he has turned half his house into a community space, and it's been a real boon to his family as well as to his community. One of the projects he created that we thought was really interesting, after the big tsunami of 2011, everybody in Japan had to reduce their energy use 15 to 20%. And maybe you remember seeing images from that time where they turned off every other light in a supermarket, for example, and right there are huge savings. His group created a project called Cool Share. And it's basically a blue dot, a big blue dot. If you could put it on your door, if your neighbors were welcome to come in and use your air conditioning with you. Very simple idea. So bring your laptop, bring your book, or your knitting, whatever it is. And this was happening at a time when people were feeling really traumatized and isolated. So it helped address that feeling of alone and what am I going to do? As well as this feeling of, okay, how am I going to reduce my energy use, still have a good quality of life? So it led to the first cooling centers in Japan. That was not something that they had there before, where people knew they could go to a public place or a restaurant that wasn't open till 6 p.m., but during the day they're now sharing their cool. Neighbors can come in and use the restaurant just to cool off. There's now across the whole country, and they're talking with the Olympics of 2020, in part because it's happening in August. And it is really very, very hot and humid in the cities of Japan, Tokyo and its surrounding areas. So could CoolShare transform this Olympic visitors' experience as well? I bet it will.
What a great example of, pooling resources of more simple living and all the benefits that I'm sure come out of just having those communal spaces for people to be together. And it really makes me realize, you know, how much the wealth and the health of one's community is really impacted by having some of these, you know, innovative mapping asset-based approaches. And that ultimately it does allow us to consume less energy, to be more efficient and more effective and improve our bottom line, right?
Right. And, you know, here in the States, a cooling center, I've never thought about going to one, but I would think about going to one there. You know, I'd go share my cool in a more casual way, maybe, than here. Here it has a more institutional feel, but it's going to be maybe for people who are unhealthy or very low income. But there's no onus like that on it. It is a much more person to person, we're all in this together kind of approach to something as simple as sharing your cool. I love it.
I so appreciate that sense of ownership and belonging and kind of in it together. And I think this is really how to create greater resilience, which is our ability to respond to changing conditions, which is so needed, as we know, with climate change happening and people really needing to be adaptable in this age of uncertainty. Is there anything you'd like to say about how Green Maps develops community resilience?
Yes, we're, you know, in addition to the mapping, locally we're working on a couple spaces and ideas for those spaces that address this very issue of community resiliency. So one of them is, an example is the Stanton Building, and it could be any building, but many cities have the same thing we have in New York. In our city parks, there are rec centers that are no longer used, and it could be a budget issue or things have changed about how people want to interact in parks, but we see them as great places for community climate action labs. So we're starting to develop a proposal around this concept that would be sited in a city park. And why a city park? Well, they're already good examples of green infrastructure, especially in cities like ours where most of the city is paved. We really need to think about stormwater and how do we retain that water. And at the same time, if we had a community space, people could learn bike repair and develop bike innovation projects. They could have a repair cafe for all kinds of other things. There could be classes on energy efficiency and solar, composting and food preservation, all sorts of skills, people-to-people skills that many people know, and maybe they've passed them on to other members of their family, but they haven't passed them on to other people in their community. And these are really valuable skills in terms of these circular or sharing economy where we need to do things in a lighter way and we need to do more with the things we already have. So too often I think that, you know, my background is in design and art, and too often I feel designers are making us no longer want what we already have. We want the new. We don't want what we have. We don't want to reformat, replay, you know, update, share, swap. And these are all the kinds of things that can happen in this community climate action lab. So It's moving slowly, but it's moving. And the idea is part of a whole disaster design related kind of theme that we've had that really looks at resiliency. If people are curious about one thing, there's a 4-minute video we created called Bike Ready. And we took footage during Hurricane Sandy's aftermath when my neighborhood was without electricity for 5 days. You'll see in the video, we also biked out to the Rockaways, and that's maybe 20 miles, to do relief work, but also to learn from people. And you see bicycles being used as for transportation, communications, energy generation, and a whole lot more. So if you go to greenmap.org/bikeready, you'll see this little video, and maybe it will make you think, I want to download the little form and start make a list of people in my own community who are bicyclers. Maybe they have bike trailers or something else that would make it so in an emergency situation, their bicycle could function like and do more. More delivery, more than you use it for every day. And it's a kind of a new way of thinking about mutual aid. How do we help one another, not how do we help the victims? We're all, all of us are in the same boat. So how do we help one another is part of the question that little video tries to ask. So those are a couple of the resiliency projects that Green Map is involved in. We're part of a 45 community-based organization network called LES Ready, Lower East Side Ready, lesready.org. You can see some of the things we're doing as a community. First, it was about recovery. Now it's about resiliency. So there's some very exciting projects coming up through that lens.
Love it. Oh, it's so inspiring, and I feel like more and more people need to hear these stories to see the good things and the innovations that are really, allowing for greater community resiliency and to bring out the best in people. People want to contribute and feel meaningful, that they are valuable and they have a role to play. And too often our modern economy, reduces people to a number and a 40-hour-a-week job title. And I feel like these kind of innovative approaches let people's gifts really, really come forth. So after we take a quick break here, we're going to be back and explore some more of the possibilities and innovations to create more resilient communities.
Are you ready to enjoy greater financial freedom? Perhaps you're like Emily, a creative entrepreneur who wants to increase her income to provide for her family. Using the free video training found at discoveryourtruewealth.com, she learned the secrets to accessing hidden resources and creating lasting wealth. Emily learned a persuasive negotiation technique to bring in more money with her top clients. She boosted her credit score and opened new financial doors while reducing expenses. And she took specific steps to strengthen her existing relationships and create a safety net for her business. With the Discover Your True Wealth training, thousands of women have improved their bank balances and secured their family's future. With this free video course, you'll transform beliefs, behaviors, and skills with money. Take charge of your financial situation with the training found at discoveryourtruewealth.com.
Welcome back. We are here with guest Wendy Brower, who is an eco-designer, social entrepreneur in New York City, and founder of the nonprofit Green Map System. And we were just talking about community resilience and some of the innovative approaches to really draw out the assets and resources and make them visible within communities. I've been working for the last year as education director of the Post Growth Institute, which people can find out more about at postgrowth.org, and I'm currently co-authoring a training manual for facilitators to learn how to do what's called an offers and needs market, which is basically a 90-minute in-person community networking event where people get a chance in a very specific format to share at small groups, their offers and then their needs. And we've seen incredible results running these for over, dozens of these events around the world, that people just to take this asset-based approach, to let people share their offers first, and really opens them up to solving and looking at the needs more easily, asking for what they need, looking at the community's resources and what's available, and how incredibly helpful and cooperative the majority of people are. And for me, the offers and needs market really brings back a more sacred marketplace where people can feel the trust and intimacy and transparency that is at the heart of an economy, which I see as a place where people care for one another. And if people want to hear more about that, you can go to offersandneeds.com and see about this project and book. And so I am so excited about the alignment, Wendy, as far as what you've been doing with the physical maps, and just curious your take on the power of having these kind of face-to-face networking events like the Offers and Needs Market to contribute to better community resilience.
So I definitely want to check out offersandneeds.com. I think that sounds great. Last year, this time, I was a TED resident. So I had a desk at the TED office in Manhattan, along with, there's a group of 23 of us in that cohort. And now there's been two more cohorts. So there's a total of something like 102 TED residents. And every Wednesday, there's lunch together. And it's really the current cohort that has lunch and does an offers and needs every week. And it's, I have seen for myself how much help people give each other and how much they help solve problems and connect dots in new ways. So I'm a big believer in helping people articulate what can they provide. And you know, we all live a lot more, I want to say in a lot more places at once when we start to do this. And I'm not being very clear about that, but we find new ways to fulfill what we need. And also, all of us have a surplus at this point of something. And it's a good way to make sure that surplus goes to the right person, that, you know, your ideas about what this thing could be used for might be totally transformed, but the good thing is the resources keep moving around, and it can be really positive and fun. Synergies can come out of it. I like it a lot.
Yes, right. The synergy where 1 + 1 equals more than 2, and people are feeling amplified and like there's a creativity where people weren't really thinking that someone else found or was looking for a personal chef, and oh, they realized they really like to cook and give nutrition advice. And so I feel like there is a great deal of creativity stimulated, and that we really can acknowledge that there is plenty, that feeling of enoughness, which is so lacking in today's culture and economy. Would you like to talk any more about what you call win-win-win situations?
Sure. You know, it's people, planet, and prosperity. So it's looking at when you're making a decision, do all three of those benefit from your choices? And I'm trying to think of a good example of something. I think it's pretty clear, but it really does impact. It really might make you change what you're doing. You might say, okay, I'm not going to buy this. It might make the store a little richer, and it might make me look a little better. But is it really doing a good job for the planet? And you might say, you know what? I actually have something I can renew. It might that would do a similar thing. And maybe the store isn't benefiting at that point, but you are. To me, it's really funny that we don't value old things unless they're antiques or vintage. So they become more valuable as they get older, but there's that middle age part of owning something that you're like, eh. Anyhow, I have a saying, which is shop at home, because you probably already have what you need there anyways. But I do love going to swap meets, and I don't know if they have them where you are, but here they take place in a bar or in a community space. The city does them now. Neighborhood groups do them. All kinds of people do it and you might bring really good stuff, and you might even say this one is for evening wear or work wear, where it's a specific kind of thing that people are swapping. Many times it's clothing. Here in New York, people sometimes bring a sewing machine. And I've even been to a swap meet where there's no mirror and you have to rely on other people's opinions to know if this looks good on you or not. So
wow.
It's kind of a fun exchange. But this idea, this triple bottom line, is something that I think a lot of businesses have changed their practices when they really start to think about this win-win-win. How do we get there? It's not easy. It's really not.
I just love that kind of creativity and resourcefulness where people are engaged in things like we're talking about with green maps and the offers and needs markets. They realize, oh, wow, you know, I'm really so close to partnerships or relationships or actual physical things that we can share, and we didn't even realize our neighbor knew how to do this thing that we needed. So I think it's just incredibly valuable in today's economy to take this revolutionary act and get more intimate with ourselves and what we have to offer and speak what we need and then have the courage to share that with other people.
I agree. There are some, you know, platforms for doing it, but I think that the live version is really very exciting, and you realize what wealth you hold in the room is part of the excitement of it. And you might initially look at a group and say, well, we don't have that much here, but you realize, wait a minute, we have a great deal of power and not just stuff, but we have lots of things one another needs, lots of new elements in our lives or new ways to look at old issues.
How was it doing it so regularly with the same group, this kind of networking meeting with your TED cohort?
It was a lot of fun, and we really got to know each other well because of it. It's 23 people you're having lunch with 14 times and hearing, or 15 times, and hearing 15 times how they're progressing on projects they're working on, what do they need now, and then you get to start thinking about it. There's a wonderful artist in our cohort, Bayates Smith. I'm missing his middle name of his. I'll look it up for you while we talk. And he makes his art out of old boomboxes, and they're hard to find. Biate Ross Smith. And so I suggested, why not take a mold of, you know, one of some of the cool boom boxes and then cast them in another material. And another member of our cohort, Paul Tasner, owns a company called Pulpworks. So he's using all recycled materials. So this could actually happen. And one of the nice things about it is it would not limit the number of boom boxes, right? That would become, in a sense, unlimited. You're really just looking at the outside shell, although he does use the works inside. But it would create a whole new body of work around this basic concept through this collaboration. So I thought that was one interesting example of the sharing. But we created a whole group of clubs that would meet before and after lunch to talk about writing a book or doing podcasting or blockchain or other new things that we were all working on and thinking about and sharing ideas about. So it was a terrific opportunity.
Oh, I love that. The more we can create space for this collaborative, collective intelligence to come forth, it's really essential right now. And this brings mm-hmm. me to another question about, you know, this notion of the gift economy. And now you've taken the green maps into open source format for people. And just right. curious your thoughts on how it's impacted different concepts of value and investment.
Well, yeah, it's a really good question. The gift economy was where we began, and I was really inspired. I lived in Seattle for a long time, and the learning about the potlatch, how Native Americans, to show their wealth, would give everything away, and they would buy things that everybody needed and then give them away. And they would be broke at the end of the party. And I was like, whoa. And yet they had an incredibly complex, culturally rich, especially in the Northwest, powerful relationships with one another. And it made me feel like it made me understand there's very different ways to do all this. So when Green Map got started, I kept saying, this is an experiment. We don't know what its future format will be or if it'll really work. So I gave away everything. And it was really very inexpensive to do so. And that became part of our ongoing credo, is keep it inexpensive to do so. Even when we started later charging for using our tools, and that was in part because we had an expensive-to-maintain mapping platform, which we still have, and it's still amazingly working for people in 40 countries right now. And, you know, we always said, you don't have to give us money. Give us some time. We need mm-hmm. these tools translated. Or you can mentor another project in your region of the world. Or these folks who also speak your language, can you help them? It's worth the same, you know, or worth more than yes. our small membership fee, which was always a sliding scale. So, as we've gone open, we've started to realize that we're giving agency to people to take Green Map to new places, and that's exactly what we wanted to do right now. We want other people to develop new tools, new games, new processes, new ways to engage people around this idea. So we no longer say you have an exclusive right to make a green map in such and such a city, and we no longer say use our engagement tools and our iconography for maps. We now say use them how you will. We have a Creative Commons license that we're using, and we're trying to practice reciprocity. So if people start to generate income from using our tool, share it with us. We'll see how that works. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
And in part, it's because we've reduced our overhead considerably, and we've looked at what is the most important aspect of what's going on here, and it's really the local leadership, and we're doing more to elevate that, help people work on this synergy, connect people so they can do more together, and be a little bit fearless about the future of where the money is going to come from, because we've always noticed it comes when you do things you love. It works.
Yes. So let's imagine the future a bit here and use our storytelling creativity together. I'd love to hear, you know, where do you imagine in the best case scenarios our communities in 20 years or so, and what is the legacy that you would like to be remembered for?
Oh, it's a difficult question for all of us, I think, but hopefully people love where they live more and care for it. I realize to a greater depth the importance of nature. I mean, so much of what we do leaves nature and the things that actually make life so much more joyful and pleasant and sweet are not necessarily part of our everyday thinking. We may say, okay, I'm going to choose an organic salad because I know that's better for the environment. But maybe somewhere down the road, people say, you know what, I actually want to learn what it takes to grow a salad, to be more involved with the moment that little sprout comes up and see what happens. There's a lot of wonder in the world, and I want to do more. Maybe my legacy will be in part to help people realize what's all around them and how they themselves can make more of this nature, culture, social justice, all these things that are here, but make them part of their lives and find them as rewarding as I have throughout mine.
Oh, I'm so right there with you. Just I was just imagining a treasure map where there's so much gold underneath the ordinary reality, and as people can access and have greater not only information in the traditional sense, but access to greater ability to communicate and express their needs and, you know, their offers and gifts that we really can begin to access more of these renewable resources, like not only for energy, but really that each one of us has this great well of inspiration and resourcefulness that often is dormant because it's not really called forth in the modern marketplace. So the more things that we're working on, like, kind of brings those up, like, hey, look at all the value and treasure that's right here, and what is most valuable to put our attention on, and what do we want to cultivate in our own communities?
I looked at your true wealth template, and I think that's a really, definitely a connection between what we're doing there. It's so much about this idea of building our relationships and our inner strength, as well as at the same time thinking about the place where we live and the way we exchange things with the world. It's all there.
Yes, yeah. I find it so empowering for people when they look at those four aspects of wealth in the true wealth template, that there is inner wealth, financial, relational, and environmental. And it really helps people like a compass for what direction to go, how to make decisions that aren't purely financial. And people are able to have greater satisfaction and joy and really create the life they want, and really look at the financial piece and their relationship with money a little bit easier, because there is a more holistic sense of what's truly valuable and how that fits in as one piece of their life.
Nicely done. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, and I really see it to be used for individuals and for communities as well, that we can be having these conversations and creating these maps of our assets and liabilities as communities in these categories. And yes.
You can start very small with your own block and see where it leads and start to think differently about what we need, what we have, who's got it, how do we get there? And that's really an important element of, you know, this whole world we're in is understanding it better brings us a richer life.
That is a great suggestion for listeners who are inspired today and want to take some step, is start by talking to your neighbors and looking at green maps and really getting a sense of the kind of things that you could uncover in your own neighborhood as far as talents and treasures and resources. And I'm curious if you want to share your website again and any other recommendations for listeners who might be inspired today.
Sure. So you can see greenmap.org, and there you can see what people have been creating and think about how you might get involved. My own website is wendybrower.com. And there you can see some of the other kinds of projects I've been involved with and different elements of my work. I would say, you know, it's spring everywhere. Grow something you've never grown before this year and see what kinds of conversations it leads you into and what discoveries it helps you make about where you live and where you want to live. And maybe it will lead you in a new direction, but take action. It's really important now that all of us think of ourselves as solutionaries, that we need to be making steps every day that are towards the better world we want to live in. And bring your neighbors with you. Bring the people you don't know with you. Bring the people who don't look like you with you. And you'll be amazed at how wonderful the world can be.
Mm. I just feel such a call to curiosity, and really appreciate how you live that, and you have evoked so much from so many communities around the world with this call to action for greater wonder and exploration in people's own communities, and just really appreciate you as a pioneer in this field and as a woman who used your unique perspective, ability to collaborate, to see the design of systems, to take in account many facets of a whole landscape and be able to integrate those and have them accessible to community leaders. So thank you so much for all the good work you've done. And any other closing thoughts you'd like to share?
I just, you know, feel really fortunate that, you know, I live in a little island, a tiny island, and that I've been able to share so many things with so many people about the bigger part of the world that, you know, is in such a state of change right now, whether it's the way we think about money or the way we think about almost everything these days. You know, if you want to dispel this feeling of uncertainty in your world, create a map. It will give you a new direction in life.
Such wise advice. Thank you, Wendy. Just feel super inspired and like, wow, there are steps that each one of us can take to become more effective leaders in our community and to create greater resilience. And where this time of uncertainty and change has a lot of opportunity for creating true wealth in our own personal lives and families and our larger communities. And it really feels like Green Maps has really been allowed a lot of communities to access some of these riches and really help people feel that belonging, that sense of ownership and stewardship. And there is such satisfaction and joy that comes to being connected to our local communities and the people and the planet where we live, and then being able to see through these, like in your project, the universal symbols and icons that then are translated, you know, throughout all divides. And so just really appreciate the wisdom and knowledge that you have brought forth, and what an incredible legacy that you've already created for bringing together communities and engaging people with a sense of curiosity. So I encourage listeners to go ahead and take this curiosity and wonder that Wendy shared with us today and apply it in your day-to-day life. And continue to ask the questions of what is needed, how can I be of service, and what is already here that I appreciate. All right, that is all for today. Thank you, everyone, and thank you so much, Wendy.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to subscribe to the show and rate and review our podcast at iTunes. Be sure to visit www.moneymorphosis.com. That's money-morphosis.com to join the growing community of empowered women who are dedicated to creating the true wealth they deserve.